Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and we're delighted to have you with us today. And my good buddy Robin is here with us as well. This is Robin Martinez from Smart Patients in Colorado. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Joyce. It's great to be here. I'm excited about our topic today.
Oh, good. Me too. And with that, we'd like to introduce our special guest today, Dr. Dan Finan, who is Director of Research at the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, otherwise known as JDRF. We'll probably use the acronym quite a bit in the conversation. Good morning, Dr. Finan.
Good morning. How are both of you?
Doing great, thanks.
Just great.
So we're interested in the new concept of an artificial pancreas. And what is an artificial pancreas? And we should probably back up and say, what is a pancreas in the first place? So you want to give us a little bit of an explanation of what a pancreas is? Because it's usually one of those silent organs that we're not even conscious about. We don't even know where it is or what it does. So fill us in a little bit on the importance of a pancreas.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. So the pancreas is, you're right, one of those maybe taken for granted organs sometimes. It plays a crucial role in regulating certain substances in the body. And in the case of type 1 diabetes, the pancreas plays a crucial role in regulating the concentration of glucose or blood sugar. So what the pancreas does in a healthy patient, a healthy person that is one without diabetes, is that it releases two different hormones in a very precisely regulated pattern that achieves very, very good, solid control of blood sugar. Those two hormones are glucagon, which tends to raise blood sugar, and insulin, which tends to lower blood sugar. What insulin does specifically is that it enables the cells in your body, like the muscular cells, to open up their walls to let glucose in from the blood into the cell where it can be used as energy. So insulin is kind of like this key that opens up cell walls and lets glucose go from the blood into cells where it can be used for energy. So what happens with diabetes, and specifically type 1 diabetes, type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease, not very well understood, wherein the body actually kills off a certain part of itself. It's a very strange phenomenon. And in the case of type 1 diabetes, these cells in the pancreas that are known as beta cells, these are the cells that produce insulin, are killed off, and they die. So what you're left with when you have full-blown stage 3 type 1 diabetes is virtually zero insulin production from your pancreas. What, of course, happens then is that you have terrible control of your blood sugars. Sometimes you have really, really high blood sugars because you're not making insulin that can be used to lower the blood sugar. But also what can happen is you can have very, very low blood sugars, because really what's happening is that the whole control system is just off. So there's been, you know, a fairly recent push in the biomedical science and technology world to say, well, why can't we create a device that mimics the actions of a pancreas to help people with type 1 diabetes. So this device would have the ability to deliver insulin to the person with diabetes in a precise, sophisticated pattern that would enable them to control their blood sugars much better than they would get without it. So that's
okay.
So somebody
with diabetes has to sort of manually do what the pancreas does automatically for most people. So they have to measure what is the sugar level in the blood, what is the glucose level in the blood. And if it's wrong, then they have to adjust it in some way, either eat orange juice because it's too low or take insulin if it's too high. Have I got that more or less right?
You've got it absolutely right. Yes, indeed. And what the patient is trying to do, and you said it very elegantly, is mimic the actions of the pancreas by measuring blood glucose and delivering insulin, or sometimes taking glucose in the form of orange juice or glucose tablets. The problem is it's very time-consuming and annoying. It's very painful in the form of finger stick measurements and injections of insulin, and it's also really hard. So even if you kind of know what you're doing, you still probably have suboptimal glucose control.
And part of that is because you can only draw a drop of blood and test your blood every so often, like 3 to 5
Absolutely.
Times a day, 3 times a day for most people, but some people have trickier diabetes and have to do it more often. And then you have to figure out, well, I have this reading, now what do I have to do about it? And so you have to have a good grasp of what your body is doing when, so that you know when to stick yourself and when to give yourself a shot of insulin and when to hold off on insulin and so on. And it's quite a lot of thought going into it, as well as the difficulty and the inconvenience.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
I would expect that there's some social action, too, because if you're in a meeting, for example, you don't want to go stick yourself and all that. So there's some embarrassment factor that would probably get in your way. And are there also things like if you have a cold, does your normal routine have to change?
Absolutely. You're right again on both counts. Back to the sort of social element of the disease. It is a very personal thing, and unfortunately, the way that you treat it does sometimes mean that you have to do certain things in public, and then you get unwanted attention. Also, attitudes change, as one goes through life. So, kids, of course, just want to have fun and play around and eat cake when they go to birthday parties, and that's a big problem for type 1 diabetes. Teenagers are very, very self-conscious, so they oftentimes suffer from very, very poor control because they really, really do not want to deal with their type 1 diabetes. As you get older, maybe you value better care for yourself more, and you value that control, and you're willing to, like you said, get embarrassed, and maybe it's not a big deal to you as you get older, but there are a lot of challenges from a social perspective. And then your second point is absolutely true as well. So there are a couple of things that really throw your control off. Illness is certainly one of them. When you have an illness, your body has physiological stress. It's stressed out, and actually you end up getting even worse glucose control on top of the fact that you might be suffering with an illness. So that's challenging. On the other side of things, exercise and the kind of exercise has an influence on the control, whether it's aerobic or anaerobic, or maybe you're training for a marathon or something. Exercise is another factor that can really complicate the whole way that insulin and glucose work together.
So obviously somewhere someone along the line said, gosh, it would be nice to have some equipment that actually mimicked the processing of the pancreas, instead of my having to think about this all the time and self-measure myself all the time and then dose myself with substances to balance myself out. And so people started thinking about artificial pancreas.
That's right. And it started, I would say, this whole push into more advanced biomedical devices started really with the first step, which was an insulin pump. So an insulin pump without a brain or without a control system and without a way to measure glucose. I'll sort of get to those later. An insulin pump was a big improvement for people who adopted it in terms of getting better control of their glucose. So what an insulin pump does is it mimics a little bit better the function of a healthy pancreas. And how it does that is instead of the previous paradigm of giving yourself multiple daily injections, say 2 to 4 times a day, an insulin pump is actually connected to you 24/7. And what it can do then is give you a small drip of insulin called a basal rate that can help your body metabolize glucose more consistently over the course of the day. You also have access, if you're sitting down to eat a meal or something, you also have easy access to give yourself a bolus through the insulin pump. So the
and
insulin
a bolus
pump was
means
sort of,
a bigger dose, right?
That's right. That's right. So the technical progress started to be made with the development of insulin pumps, and now there are, you know, a handful of very good insulin pumps available to patients, certainly in the U.S. market, but also worldwide. So then we needed a couple of other pieces in order to really get to where we are now with a artificial pancreas device. We needed the ability to measure glucose continually. The pancreas has the ability to measure glucose continuously because it's in your body, and that's what it's programmed to do. It measures glucose, and then it makes these adjustments in terms of secretion of insulin and glucagon accordingly. So, but we don't have that access to glucose concentration in the body. So there's another product category called continuous glucose monitors, which have come a long, long way in terms of their accuracy. And these are usually little sensors that you put into yourself, into the transcutaneous tissue. So there's a little cannula that goes in, probably only about a half a centimeter deep. There's a little sensor at the tip of the cannula that measures glucose in the interstitial fluid. And then there's some processing that happens with the raw measurements that are coming off of the sensor in order to understand better what the glucose concentration is within the blood.
You used a couple of scientific terms that I'd like to water down a little bit. So a cannula is like a tiny little needle or something attached to
needle.
What, the size of a Band-Aid that help me understand that.
Right. Okay. So good point. Yes, it's a tiny little needle that does need to go into the area just beneath your skin, not very far. There is a small, a little prick involved, but luckily we don't need to do that more than once a week or so with the current generations of continuous glucose monitors.
The patient relocates the cannula, or do they have to go to the doctor to get that done? Or
the patient can do this themselves. And actually, there's the companies that are working on continuous glucose monitors have made it pretty simple so that the device comes in basically an applicator that you just have to follow a couple of directions and then bada bing, you've got your sensor firmly attached to your abdomen. And then just to sort of complete the picture on what these things look like is the little sensor that's in this little needle that's just below your skin is attached to a little patch where some of the calculations happen. This patch is stuck to your skin, usually your abdomen area, with some medical adhesive. And then, but that part is wireless. So that part just looks like a little patch that'll be on your abdomen that communicates wirelessly with some kind of a receiving device, whether that's an integrated insulin pump. Now we're getting sort of closer to the artificial pancreas implications, or possibly to a cell phone. There are companies now that are sharing data wirelessly from, you know, where the glucose is measured to, let's say, your cell phone.
So, for example, if it were my own self, if I'm a grown-up, then I would set it and understand it myself. But if this were on my child, would it communicate with my cell phone so that I could watch and make sure that my kid is okay?
Absolutely. This was a really great development that's happened recently where that's one of the functions is you can, quote unquote, follow anybody that you want to follow. I think you can follow up to 5 or 10 patients or something like that. So certainly if your loved one has a CGM, be it your significant other or your child, then you would want to follow them through the app. And so you'd be seeing the same data that they're seeing that's really happening live in their body, even if you're across the country. So it's a really cool use of technology.
So what about things like showering, bathing, and swimming?
Yeah, so there are various degrees of kind of daily life activities that you can do reasonably well with these devices, both with the continuous glucose monitor and the insulin pump. For the most part, you know, showering is certainly okay, although some people still want to take off their, disconnect their, let's say, their insulin pump. Just so they're untethered when they go to shower or swim, that's okay as long as you know if you're away from your insulin delivery for a little bit, it's okay as long as you get it hooked up again soon. So you know for the most part, these devices don't interfere too badly with those activities that you mentioned, and some take great pride in being able to say that they're waterproof more than others. So they use those as selling points, and for a good reason. If water is a big part of your lifestyle, especially maybe in the summertime or something, then that's maybe the pump that you'd like to wear.
Right, but the glucose sensor and the little cannula, they stay attached and you can expose them to water?
Yep, they sure do.
Yeah, so then pretty close to trouble free.
I mean, we've made a lot of progress. I wouldn't go that far yet. Unfortunately, we have a lot of work to do, but we've come a long way now.
I understand that there's one of these systems that has already been approved by the FDA, and that there are others in the pipeline, but. The insulin pumps, as you indicated, have been around for years, so that part, I assume, is not what's up for approval. What's up for approval must be the glucose monitoring system and the communication between the two.
So actually what really is up for approval is the complete holistic system, and there's one element that we didn't really talk about yet that I'll talk about here, and I'll put it in the context of this system that you're referring to. So the third element to really get an artificial pancreas device functional is you have the ability to deliver insulin now. You have the ability to measure glucose. So we need a brain in between those two that can make calculations based on what the blood sugar is doing, knowing what the insulin will do, and therefore being able to control glucose through the manipulation of insulin delivery. And that thing is called an algorithm. And there have been, a lot of progress made in terms of coming up with really sophisticated algorithms that use models of the physiology within patients when it comes to insulin and glucose. So really what this is a little computer program that would be located on one of these devices, probably the insulin pump. It would accept data from the continuous glucose monitor in terms of glucose concentration. it would go through a series of calculations, and ultimately it would output an insulin delivery rate that would have the best chances of normalizing blood sugar for right now. And then what happens is that – go ahead.
So I'm wondering, is this algorithm individualized to the patient, or is there like a search for a control algorithm for everybody?
So it's an insightful question. It's an insightful question. There's actually some of both going on right now. So in theory, if we could have a one-size-fits-all algorithm, that would be the best, because if it works, then that would simplify things, and simplicity is always good. But it's, you know, becoming more and more evident that patients have such different glucose insulin dynamics, you know, between patients and also over the course of their lifetime, and their insulin glucose dynamics might change greatly. We brought up the example of when you get sick, you get the flu or something like that, your insulin glucose dynamics change greatly. So to kind of bring it back home to your question, I would say going forward, companies and researchers are almost certainly going to focus on making algorithms more individualized, whether it's with some kind of adaptive or learning mechanism, applying artificial intelligence or what's known as machine learning to these algorithms so that you can track better how patients are changing over time.
You know, one thing that comes up for me as you're speaking is that the parents of a child with type 1 diabetes frequently become the brain that's figuring this all out. And I know that one of my friends had a real hard time sending her child to camp because she was feeling like, I can't control his insulin. Is he going to be okay? And it seems to me that these systems not only would be good for the patient, but they might be very freeing for the parent because they have some way that they can check. You know, if they can look on their smartphone and say, you know, your kid's okay, don't worry, or red flag going up, better call the nurse, that would be a huge comfort to the parent as well.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I couldn't have said it any better. Peace of mind is going to be a major driving force for the development of these products. These products are really cool because they do a couple of really great things that are intrinsically related. So they improve glucose control. That's number one. And that's probably the most important thing because, you know, that relates, that really gets to the actual physiological disease state.
Right.
With better control, you're less likely to develop complications from diabetes later in life. So there's a whole litany of benefits that come from having good control. And maybe that's sort of an obvious thing, but that's the number one benefit. What it does hand in hand is it releases the patient of this onus, you know, this constant responsibility, this constant task of having to self-regulate their own blood sugars, make all these decisions, stick themselves with all these medical devices. So it does those two things hand in hand, which is really, really cool. And then the third thing is what you mentioned about this sort of peace of mind. It gives everybody, you know, this hopefully the sense of relief. There will certainly have to be a sense of trust that builds up first. But I'm confident that patients that use these products, even just for a little while, can learn to trust them. And then once that trust is there, then you can really start to see some peace of mind.
So will this free diabetics to be able to, like, go to the movies and have popcorn and soda, not the healthiest thing in the world, but
yeah,
to do that without thought and just trust the pump to take care of the artificial pancreas to take care of everything?
It's the $64,000 question. And I think that someday there will be, I think someday, sooner rather than later, there will be a product that's advanced enough to where you're virtually, you know, free of the burden of your type 1 diabetes. You'll always have it. It's a method to very effectively treat the disease, but it's certainly by no means a cure. I will say at JDRF, we are also absolutely active in doing other kinds of type 1 diabetes research, and a cure is one of them. But in the meantime, I think these artificial pancreas devices can get pretty close to your scenario of, you know, just kind of living a normal life and not having to worry about anything. There's some technological challenges between where we are now and that level of freedom, but essentially, you know, there's researchers in all kinds of different areas that are working on things that will hopefully enable that level of sophistication. For instance, you know, faster acting insulins. If we had faster acting insulins to use in an artificial pancreas, then maybe we could get to that level of freedom. So there's some other, you know, areas that are very important, very related to artificial pancreas, but it's not exactly artificial pancreas science and technology. It's related.
That makes sense to me. I think all of us have seen, you know, friends who have to balance, you know, like if I'm going to the birthday party, then I can't eat this now. Or,
sure.
You know, having to stop and stick themselves or stop and take a shot. And it would be great for all concerned if they could live their lives more normally.
Absolutely.
Right. So you'd still need to have a sensible diet, sensible approach to what you put in your mouth in addition to that. But having an artificial pancreas working for you, this always brings home to me that the things we take for granted, the sort of what happens automagically in our bodies that we just aren't even conscious of. And when it's not working right, what we have to do, the lengths we have to go to try to compensate for it is pretty amazing. So it gives you a whole new appreciation for a pancreas.
It does. Actually, anecdotally, and I fortunately don't have type 1 diabetes myself, but still I wanted to kind of live a little bit of the patient's experience when I was first starting to study this. And I went on one of these continuous glucose monitors just to see how my blood sugars were controlled by my pancreas. And it's just amazing what your pancreas does, what it's programmed to do. It provides this amazing control that, you know, here we are as in a scientific community, just trying to emulate, just trying to get even half as good a job as the pancreas does. It's a challenge. So your point's well taken, and it's really important, I think, to remember how fortunate we are when we don't have certain challenges.
That's right. And we should also mention that the pancreas does a whole bunch more than creating insulin, and that those other things are not being addressed by this. But the insulin pump, insulin is such a clear and present danger to people who have this condition that it is the most critical one, and that's what we're addressing first. But there are other digestive enzymes that the pancreas produces, and one of these years we might learn how to do those too.
I think you're right.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Finan, for being with us and clarifying so well what the challenges are for people with diabetes and the technological compensations that we're working on for it. So thank you. Is there anything else in particular you'd like to leave with our listeners before we sign off?
I don't believe so. It was a pleasure discussing my passion with you, and I hope that the listeners get a lot out of it. And if you know, I encourage the use, the embrace of technology when it comes to treating diseases like type 1 diabetes. And I just would encourage patients that might be thinking about if an artificial pancreas is right for them to do a little bit more homework and educate themselves a little bit more and maybe try it.
So where do we stand on insurance issues with this at this point?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I think we're not quite where we need to be yet, but I think some insurers have understood the value proposition for devices like this. There have been, you know, large clinical studies that have shown, you know, kind of beyond a shadow of a doubt that there are benefits in terms of glucose control, but it's a little bit remains to be determined where this all will shake out with the whole payer aspect of it. So there's certainly some work to do there. And to be honest with you, I don't know exactly which ones, which insurers might pay for this and which ones don't. But we're at again at JDRF, we're very cognizant of the fact that we need to get things like this reimbursed. So there's certainly a team working on that 24/7.
It seems to me if it would avoid even one hospitalization, it would pretty much pay for itself.
Absolutely. Yep. Hospitalizations are very expensive. So those kind of studies are longer in duration to show that, you know, these kind of things can avoid that. But I think, you know, I'm an optimist, and I think these things will show their value over time, hopefully sooner rather than later, and become much more widely adopted.
Great. Well,
exciting
thank you very
stuff.
Much. It is.
Thank you.
And then thank you both. Thank you, Robin, for being with us, and thank you, everybody, for listening. And we hope that you'll be with us again soon to talk about these issues. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Take good care.
Suffer from chronic CFED or can't focus energy drain? Try over-the-counter Vibrin. One tablet contains the same caffeine as a cup of coffee, but without the calories or coffee breath. Vibrin, caffeine, not coffee. Taking Vibrin may result in increased productivity and decreased dread in setting alarms. Unexpected enjoyment of the graveyard shift has been associated with Vibrin. Vibrin may be a better budget option than drinking coffee. It may also decrease the urge to doze off, skip work, or exhibit signs of slacking. All jokes aside, always read the label, take only as directed, and limit caffeine as it may cause real side effects. Not for children under age 12.
When the weather suddenly changes, NBC Boston's early warning weather has you covered. The NBC Boston team has the tools and the technology to keep you safe. With Sky Ranger flying high over Boston watching the roads, or Storm Ranger, our one-of-a-kind mobile Doppler radar, and Weather Warrior, our four-wheel drive storm chaser. When the weather changes, early warning weather has you covered. On the only NBC station in Boston, NBC Boston Channel 10.